Do you, Chris, take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? Do you promise to barrage her with obscure facts concerning comics, movies, TV shows, and toys?
I do.
And Cindy, do you take this man-child to be your lawfully wedded husband? Do you promise to humor him by engaging him in his obsessive ramblings, for better or worse, in pre-crisis or in post?
Sure, why not?
Then by the power invested in me by the High Father of the Fourth World, I now pronounce you Supermates. You may podcast with the bride.
Hello and welcome to episode 81 of Supermates, the Husband and Wife Geekcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Cindy.
And we're back on Supermates. We haven't really been very far, but and we're part of JL May. So we're taking our first break from JLU Cast to participate in a Justice League themed event, even though we're not covering the Justice League. Instead, we're covering the Teen Titans, specifically the Silver Age Teen Titans one-shot special. So what is JL May? Well, it's a 12-part event spread across several comic-related podcasts hosted by our podcasting friends. This is the third annual event, and we participated in all three. This year, we are covering The Silver Age, a fifth-week event from 2000. So what's a fifth-week event, Cindy?
Simply enough, it's a publishing stunt DC would pull back around this time period when a month would have a fifth Wednesday. So another comic book date. They'd put out a series of one or two shots around a central theme. Other fifth-week events include the alternate Tangent Universe titles, Girl Frenzy, and The Kingdom, the non-Alex Ross sequel to Kingdom Come, spearheaded by its co-creator, Mark Waid.
Who is also the mastermind behind The Silver Age. The Silver Age is an event which attempts to replicate the feel of DC Comics during the late 50s through late 60s, but still set in the post-crisis DC Universe. So it's set in a past that never quite existed, but kinda sorta did. With some retcon changes to actual publishing history, etc.
So like you always say, comics.
Exactly. The basic story of the Silver Age is that a heretofore unknown alien villain... Did you just say heretofore unknown alien villain named...
I didn't, I did.
That was a Infinity War reference. Agamemno has given several... Sorry. The heretofore unknown alien villain named Agamemno... I want to leave the extra M out of there. Agamemno has given several of our heroes' archenemies the ability to switch bodies with their foes. The Penguin is in Batman's body and vice versa. Aquaman and Black Manta have exchanged bodies, as have The Flash and Mr. Element, for some reason, because Captain Cold was busy or something. I don't know.
It's nice how it lined up with their specific arch nemesis, so you know.
Yeah. Before listening to our show, you may want to check out the previous chapters of the crossover, especially part one over at Justice's First Dawn. Other than the first part, for right now, you can kind of listen and read along out of order, but as we get toward the end, you'll want to follow the handy scorecard we provide. Check the show notes and the end of this episode for the proper reading and listening order. So with all that out of the way, let's take a look at the Silver Age Teen Titans.
Here come the Teen Titans, a quartet of towering talents. Kid Flash, whose speed defies the eye to follow. Wonder Girl, swift and powerful super lass. Speedy, whose fantastic arrows perform awesome feats. Aqualad, bold and daring marine marvel. Fabulous foursome for right against might. The Teen Titans.
Silver Age Teen Titans was cover dated July 2000. It was on sale May 10th, 2000. The cover is by classic Teen Titans artist Nick Carty and inker Dave Gibbons, and shows the Titans battling what appears to be a group of supervillains. And the cover copy reads, "Here it is, an all-new tale from the Silver Age, Teen Titans. Who's that making the scene against our Fab Foursome? If you answered Penguin, Black Manta, and Mr. Element, you couldn't be more wrong. Learn who's who and what's not in the tyrannical terror of Sheriff Law." So, what do you think of the cover?
It looks straight out of the 60s, 70s. I mean, you know, it's a nice homage.
Yeah. I like it's the Fab Foursome. There's no Speedy on the cover.
Yeah.
I love Nick Carty's art. He either drew or inked just about every issue of the first run of Teen Titans, and it's great to have him back on the team. It is a bit weird that Robin's helping Kid Flash punch Mr. Element while Wonder Girl's fighting the Penguin. That's kind of weird. But Dave Gibbons does a really nice job of refining the look of the art back closer to Nick Carty's 60s style because it had evolved somewhat. Mm-hmm. In the Silver Age Secret Files and Origins, which will be covered later on in the JLMA crossover event, you can see Nick Carty's original sketch, which shows that he drew Wonder Girl in her later red jumpsuit costume, which he designed. Mm-hmm. Dave Gibbons changed it to her original period-appropriate look, which is also inside the comic.
Right.
Yeah. So, The Tyrannical Terror of Sheriff Law. Marv Wolfman was the writer. Pat Olef was the penciler. Andrew Hennessy was the inker. Carla Feeney, colorist. Jameson, separator. Okay. John Costanza, letterer. Tony Bedard, associate editor. Dan Raspler, editor. Titans Roll Call, Robin, Kid Flash, Speedy, Aqualad, and Wonder Girl.
Of Seaside, a teenage boy flees from armored and armed guards as he makes his way to the city limits. The guards receive the order from a man named Sheriff Law to take the boy down. He is shot by laser fire and left to die on the highway. Luckily, he is found by passing motorists who call the police. The barely conscious boy has one message for the cops. Teen Titans. We need the Teen Titans.
In their cavernous Titans lair, the Fab Fivesome in question reads their most recent bag of Genchi fan mail. In addition to prom date requests for Wonder Girl, they receive several letters from the teens of Seaside, asking for their help against the new town sheriff. The Titans head out in their swinging helicopter for Seaside.
They miss an incoming phone call from the Penguin? This isn't actually the waddling master of foul play, but Batman trapped in his old foe's body. As he gets a busy signal from the Titans' lair, Batman confers with his fellow heroes turned villains, Flash, swapped with his rogue Mr. Element, and Aquaman in the body of his number one foe, Black Manta. While Flash is disappointed they won't get the Titans' help in defeating Agamino, the alien who caused their problems, Aquaman is a bit excited that his new body doesn't require a dip in water once every hour and looks forward to going to baseball games and Disney. Batman, however, is not at all happy in Penguin's out-of-shape body, which sweats profusely.
The swap Justice Leaguers make the best of their situation, with the Flash using Mr. Element's gun to change the gasoline in their car to helium, and Aquaman using Black Manta's eye lasers to provide propulsion. Suddenly, the car is blasting through the sky like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang as they head off to seek the aid of their missing sidekicks.
The Titans arrive in Seaside and check out the town in civilian guise. They find the teenagers having fun, but they seem mesmerized. After Speedy makes yet another pass at Wonder Girl, the Titans witness a young man running through the streets, telling everyone that they must break free from Sheriff Law's power. The boy is blasted by a strange beam concealed in a gazebo tower, and suddenly he is obedient once more. Clearly, it's Titans time.
The costumed Titans are spotted on the monitors of Sheriff Law, who looks like Deathlok and Woody from Toy Story Had a Baby. Law's armored goons attack the Titans, but the Teen Team Supreme makes mincemeat out of them. At Titans HQ, the swapped heroes arrive to find their protégés missing. But ever the detective, Batman finds the fan mail that they had been reading from Seaside. Back in that formerly quaint little Oceanside town, Sheriff Law shows up and blasts the Titans personally.
Arriving at Seaside, the Justice Leaguers witness their unconscious partners being taken into Law's stronghold. But Law spots what he perceives as supervillains on his monitors and, thinking that they have come after the Titans to attack them, sends his goons after them. When Black Manta's helmet goes on the fritz, Batman orders a retreat, but his overweight body won't fit through the hole in the floor Flash made with the element gun, so he's captured by Law's men.
Also captured are the Titans, who are all trapped in personal prisons suited to their powers and abilities, because I guess Law just had them lying around? Kid Flash's arms and legs are trapped in vibration-proof steel. Robin has a helmet on that makes him look like Pharaoh Lad, and will fry him if he thinks too much. Wonder Girl's strength is useless because her limbs are shackled, floating in a magnetic beam between two poles. Aqualad is tied up with just enough water dripping on him to keep him alive. And Speedy, well, Law just took away his bow and arrows.
Yeah, sees him as a real threat there, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Robin sees Law bring in whom he believes to be the Penguin, and when he wonders why he's there, he gets zapped. Penguin tells him that he's really Batman and to remember the incident of the two stilettos. Robin is puzzled since only he and Batman know about that, but he gets zapped again just thinking about it. Law straps the Penguin into a machine and attempts to probe his mind about why he and the other villains are there. Back in their prison, an anguished Robin tells his teammates to work together and they listen. Speedy directs Wonder Girl to move the magnetic clamps over her legs. She uses them to direct Speedy's metal arrows over to Kid Flash, who can still vibrate his body enough to create a draft. The draft sends the arrows to the water pipes over Aqualad, shattering them. With his strength back, he frees his teammates.
Just then, Aquaman uses Manta's recharged helmet to blast in, but the Titans don't believe his and Flash's story and only see their enemies. They attack and restrain their mentors, and the older heroes are forced to use their weapons against their partners in order to escape. As always, Sheriff Law is watching all of this, and he believes the villains are, in fact, really heroes, because he's apparently brighter than the Titans. He tells the unconscious Bat-Gwen that he's going to test his recalibrated behavior modifier on the Titans. Moments later, Mr. Ellie Flash and Aquamana arrive and free their teammates.
Like those names you came up with there, baby.
Thank you.
The Titans and the Leaguers converge on the town square, and both parties are talking truce. When Law blasts the kids with his modified modifier, he then orders the Titans to attack. The Freaky Friday Leaguers can't bring themselves to harm their wards, nephews, and proteges, but the teens don't have that problem, with Law ordering them to kill. Bat-Gwen manages to confront Robin with the fact that they never kill, which confuses the Boy Wonder long enough for the Leaguers to make it to Law's fortress.
The battle continues inside, with Law going into a tirade about how he built the modifier because parents wanted their kids kept in line, because long-haired freaks won't listen to anyone over 30. As he prattles on, Robin backs Bat-Gwen up to the modifier's control panel, once again talking murder. His mentor reasons with the confused Boy Wonder, who suddenly realizes he can't kill. Law orders that he must obey him, barking, "You belong to me!" In unison, the dynamic duo declare, "No! No one belongs to anyone." They pound their fist into the conveniently placed and existence-defying giant red self-destruct button, and Law's world begins to crumble.
Bat-Gwen orders everyone out, but Law desperately tries to salvage his equipment, thinking his method of order is the only hope the world has. But the entire facility explodes. In the smoke and debris, the Leaguers make their exit, knowing their thick-headed sidekicks will never believe them. As the police round up what appears to be Law and the rest of his men, Robin makes a call to Batman, who is of course really the Penguin in Batman's body. Since Robin is now apparently permanently brain damaged by the affair, he doesn't catch the telltale clues that should inform him that this isn't his mentor, especially since he talked to a Penguin who claims he was the Batman just a few minutes prior.
Rats! I mean, that is a shame. But don't worry, the JLA will handle those miscreants. Go back to your kiddie games and don't bother me again. Goodbye.
Oy.
Robin makes some schmaltzy speech to the kids and adults of Seaside about how they have to get along with each other. As the Titans fly back to their lair, Robin stews about Batman calling their adventures kiddie games. Just wait till I get back to the Batcave. The end.
It was a golden age. Our Martian civilization was at the height of its peace and prosperity.
like Martians came from beneath the planet's surface, bringing fire from the planet's guts, and they burned us all.
I lost my family. Came to Earth when my civilization was destroyed.
Detective John Jones is what you might call my human alter ego.
I'm not the only thing from outer space that's come, but right now I'm the only thing that can stop alien invasion.
My name is John Jones.
Also known as the Martian Manhunter.
I'm Mars' sole survivor. There's a reason for that.
I will defend Earth.
Ye Idle Head of Yabanu. Podcast available through iTunes, Shout Engine, and the Internet Archive.
Phew! Another great show wrapped.
Sure was.
Now, time to move on to our serious business. Time for the monthly team meeting. So, Team WFD, roll call, activate. Host, Mike.
I'm here, bro.
Webmaster Doug.
Hey, everybody.
Kapow. Tech support Rifty. Huzzah! It is I, Rifty. A sentient Twitter account, Wilfred.
Hello, humans.
And me, other host, Paul. Okay, everyone present. Now let's look at our upcoming schedule because we've got some big things coming up. I think our first order of business should be the news segment. Thoughts?
Is the news segment about my triumphant return to your world?
What the f***?
Holy s***.
Son of a...
Who let the candle maker in here? Wilfred?
There are far too many humans on this show. I'm just trying to balance things out.
Look, I'm sorry, Candlemaker. There's nothing really for you in the upcoming episodes. Plus, let's be honest, you had your 15 minutes.
What? How dare you? I'm King Kandor.
Yeah, whatever. Look, we've got a new segment launching. We've got some guests planned, Jail May 2 to look forward to, not to mention our 100th episode coming up, and we really don't have room for you. I'm sorry.
But what? Fine. Whatever. You mortals and your show suck.
Oh, yeah? Well, we might suck, but we can still blow you out just like Dorothy the Ape-Face Girl did.
Yeah, in your face, King Candle.
Oh, ha-ha. Very funny. Bye, losers. See you in hell.
Man, that guy was a jerk.
Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol podcast, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Okay, before we get into what we thought of all this, a little background on the creators. Of course, Marv Wolfman is best known for writing and co-creating a later version of the Teen Titans, but he did actually write for the original series as well in the late Silver Age. Wolfman's third credit in comics was for Teen Titans number 18, November-December 1968, a story he co-wrote with lifelong friend Len Wein. He returned in issue number 22 to pen The Origin of Wonder Girl, a story he'd continued to revisit for decades.
Mm.
He, of course, wrote nearly every issue of New Teen Titans and New Titans from 1980 through 1996. Around this time in 2000, his output in comics had become much more sporadic, much like it is today. Pat Olef was no stranger to teen heroes, having drawn Untold Tales of Spider-Man early in the 90s, and at the time this issue was released, he was the regular penciler on Spider-Girl, which he drew for 5 years. Okay, so now that we got that out of the way, what did you think of this?
It's your typical story that you would have seen in the 60s or 70s, you know. And it kind of read like an episode of Batman 66, the TV show.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, yeah, if they had, like, other heroes and things like that, yeah. Imagine if they'd given Burt Ward a Teen Titans spinoff back then.
Yeah, you know.
That'd been awesome, yeah. I think Wolfman was trying to evoke the wackiness of the Silver Age era, and in particular the Titans, but the mix, it just doesn't quite gel. It's a little too goofy in parts, and it's not goofy enough in others. I mean, it does feel like a Silver Age or early Bronze Age comic that's not, you know, being socially relevant or something. But it doesn't have that, you know the Bob Haney Teen Titans comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know how the goofy that was. One wonders how Bob Haney would have handled this because Haney was the classic writer of the Titans' very early appearances. He co-created the team in 1964. He was the writer folks remember for giving the Titans quote-unquote teen speak dialogue, which probably never existed outside of that comic and Frankie and Annette beach movies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Genchi gear, things like that, Flasheroo, Twinkle Toes, you know. Haney actually does write the Silver Age Brave and the Bold issue, which is going to be reviewed later on in this crossover. So that's another title he was associated with. But I kind of wish they tapped him for the Titans. This story does evoke the early Titans stories that Haney did, because every issue had the Titans answering a summons from some teenagers in a town where the kids and adults weren't getting along, and somehow a supervillain gets shoehorned into the plot and tries to manipulate the teenagers, usually, or right. something like that. From the very earliest, the very first appearance of the Teen Titans on. So Wolfman nails that part, but I kind of wish everything had been set to 11 on the Zany meter. Because it's like, it's getting close, but it's not quite there. You know, as it stands, Sheriff Law, he's a bit too modern looking. He looks like someone took parts from random G.I. Joes and made a custom character. You know, they took like Wild Bill's cowboy hat and some other guy's pants and, you know, the head off some cobra dude or something. He's got a brown cowboy hat, half cyborg face, and brown camouflage pants.
And why is he a cyborg?
We never know. Why he's a cyborg? How he's a cyborg? What do the parents think about him zombifying their children? If they actually let him do it, why would the Titans leave those kids in their care? You know, I did think there were some fun moments though, like Aquaman being excited about Black Manta's body.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna go to Disney.
He's going to Disneyland. Yeah. Batman's constantly sweating and huffing and puffing in Penguin's body. That was a nice touch. I mean, he's constantly like wiping his brow and he's sweaty. And when he's running, he's like... them making the car fly, that's very wacky.
Oh my goodness. It's straight out of a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's maybe even a little broader than a lot of Silver Age comics would have got back then. Wolfman's Titans Tales of the Time, which much more subdued... as were Steve Skates, who came in later and took over. The stories got preachier and the dialogue got more flowery, but it wasn't that, you know, Haney, zany Haney teen speak anymore. Mm-hmm. So this kind of feels a little bit like that. I did like how the Titans escaped the death trap.
Well, and I liked how Speedy is the one that told him what to do.
Right.
Because, you know, he's like, oh, I took your arrows away. You're no big deal. But he's the one who figured out how to get out of the trap.
Right.
Because
Robin couldn't, he could just say work together. And he was like, ah, you know.
Yeah.
He got zapped. But yeah, it was all Speedy's idea. Which is kind of interesting because, you know, we've got the five Titans here. Because really, in the comics, you had the four... Well, in the first team-up, it wasn't even called Teen Titans. It was just Robin, Aqualad, and Kid Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And then they added Wonder Girl, who shouldn't have even existed. That was basically Bob Haney and the editor not realizing that Wonder Girl was not a separate character.
Yeah.
She was like Superboy. She was a past version of Wonder Woman. So they, you know, threw her in there, and she's shown, like, waving bye to... Wonder Woman and Hippolyta, but they had done stories where they all existed simultaneously, and Wonder Tot.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, you can kind of understand that why they were confused. But there was those four, and then Aqualad left, and then Speedy came in. Speedy had guest starred a few times, but there were very few stories where it was all five of them together at first. But on the Filmation cartoons, they couldn't use Robin. So Speedy kind of took Robin's place. So that kind of feels like what's going on here in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. But one thing that really gets me, at what point would the Titans at least start to entertain the idea that these are their mentors? I mean, I know they say, I don't know how you learned our secrets, but I mean, come on, even in the Silver Age, heroes and villains were swapping bodies like, you know, they'd done it like 100 times by now.
Every third issue.
Right, right. You know, the plot's well-developed, and it's very dense. I mean, sure, Law himself doesn't make a lot of story sense, and why and how he could develop all this tech just to use on teenagers seems a bit much, but that's classic Titans. You know, random, unexplained, done-in-one villains just show up all the time.
Again, a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah, yeah. A lot happens in this issue, just like a Silver Age comic, and it's not a quick read. I mean, it takes a while to read this one. Olaf's art has that old school look to it that fits the story. It's still got more contemporary pacing, but it feels right for the most part. It's nothing overly dynamic, but it works with the material. Did you like the art okay?
Oh, yeah, the art was fine. I mean, personally, I thought Wonder Girl should have popped you know, Speedy in the head, but, you know.
We kept hitting on her. I mean, that was in the comics at the time, you know.
Oh, I know.
They all actually hit on her.
Give it a rest. I mean, gee whiz.
They all hit on her, except usually Robin didn't. That was the only, because he was always the, you know, level-headed, stay on task. Task one, you know.
It's a girl.
yeah, basically. Yeah, and I mean, they were back and forth between, like, her, like, Roy and Wally, like, were really hard hitting on her all the time. So, it went back and forth between those two, especially after Speedy was on there full time. I think, you know, ultimately, despite my criticism, this is a nice throwback story to a simpler time. You know, it's very broad in spots, but not at others. It's like Wolfman wanted to evoke Bob Haney, but he kind of refused to let go of his own voice because, you know, he had written the Titans so much. So it's kind of an odd blend of the Titans' two most famous eras in a weird way. You know, it's like Marv Wolfman, like New Teen Titans Marv Wolfman tackling Haney Teen Titans. So I guess as a sampler of the characters, it does kind of work because somewhere in the middle is like, well, if you split this apart, you'd have the extreme of the Haney Titans and then the New Teen Titans, you know. So it kind of works in that way. And in a lot of ways, the Silver Age event itself is like that. It's trying to harken back to those bygone days, but still firmly rooted in the post-crisis DCU. I mean, like, there's no Wonder Woman back in this for Wonder Girl to be, you know, inspired by at this point. They still haven't fixed that retcon post-crisis yet. It has moments where it works and others where you just can't reconcile the current versions of the characters with their former selves. Ultimately, it's a fun distraction for the fifth week, and it gave some classic creators a chance to return to the spotlight, and that's never a bad thing.
Right.
I, you know, I kind of had fun with it. It was fun. It, you know, it's, and overall, I thought the Silver Age event was pretty fun. At the time, I remember thinking this was pretty cool. Well, you got anything else to say about this one?
No, we're good.
I think so. Well, that'll do it. Be sure to check out all the shows participating in JL May. Justice's First Dawn covers the Silver Age number one. Relatively Geeky Presents covers the Silver Age Challengers of the Unknown. Coffee and Comics is going to cover the Silver Age Justice League of America. Waiting for Doom, Paul and Mike, who started this crazy JL May thing, are covering the Silver Age Doom Patrol. Idlehead of Diablo, which is Frank, is covering the Silver Age Dial Age for Hero. The Long Box Crusade is covering the Silver Age The Flash. The Lantern Cast is covering the Silver Age Green Arrow. No, of course, Green Lantern. They're covering Green Lantern. Comic Reflections is covering the Silver Age, The Brave and the Bold. That's where you get your Bob Haney story. Batgirl Oracle is covering the Silver Age Showcase, which features Batgirl in a new version of the Seven Soldiers of Victory that only appeared in this crossover. Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill is covering the Silver Age 80-page giant, which wraps up the storyline itself. And then on the Fire and Water podcast, Aquaman and Firestorm, the Fire and Water podcast, the Silver Age Secret Files and Origins are going to be covered by Rob and Shag, whoever the hell those guys are.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
As for Supermates, well, Cindy and I will return with a new JLU cast next, but Supermates will be back at least by September for our annual House of Frankenstein four-part Halloween horror event. Maybe sooner, depending on what comes up.
Right, but we'll
definitely be back in the fall. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and go check out all the other chapters of JL May. Bye.
Bye.
In your heart. Mates is a Franklin and Franken production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright by respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue my mommy and daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for Supermates and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast.
Chaps direct me to a policeman. Commodore Schmidlap's the name. Big Ben Distilleries, you know.
Holy costume party, that's the Penguin.
Obviously.
What's his game, I wonder?
What's your game, Penguin?